Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, every day we talk about issues of, you know, of importance to the working class. In fact, you know, in the last hour, we were talking with Dr. Allison Gill about the abortion issue, which, you know, I think right now is the most important issue to women in this country, their right to self-determination. But, you know, all of the issues that have been coming up, from racism to sexism to gender problems that we're struggling with, all of this comes back to working people getting the short end of the stick and the struggles that come out of it. And I love when people write books telling stories of struggle and success and people fighting, and I like winning. I mean, yeah, this is one of the things I think, you know, the former guy talked about that was so engaging. I like winning. Now, not that kind of winning, but I like winning. And I think that's why this book caught my attention. It's a fiction, which is, you know, when you're talking about historical context, fiction, you know, change the name to protect the innocent and, well, the vulnerable. But I think it's well worth it. That's why I've asked the author to come talk with me, Elaine Bravo and her husband, Larry Miller. They wrote this book called Standing Up, Tales of Struggle. And that's why I've asked Ellen Bravo to come share some thoughts on the book. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. So glad to be here. Thank you.
So, like I said, I'm reading through this, and, you know, there's a lot of historical stuff in here, but it's written, you know, from the, you know, a fictional kind of way with the main characters, who I can only assume are you and your husband, or I think, right?
Yes. So Nick is inspired by Larry, and the character Sophie is inspired by me.
And what made you want to write a book that spanned, I mean, this is spanning, what, 5 decades?
Right, 50 years. We wanted to tell stories about the people that the author Mbolo Mbue calls the deliberately unheard. People aren't voiceless. They all have voices. They just don't have a megaphone. And the people controlling the megaphone try to make sure that they don't get heard. So we want to tell stories about people that are often left out, and show the moments in particular when they realize that the exploitation and the oppression they face is not inevitable, it's changeable. And in fact, they're the ones who can change it, but not all by themselves when they work together. Yeah. And we wanted to show that glorious feeling of stepping into power and the small wins and the recognition that that has to go on. There is no substitution for building relationships, organizing for long-term change.
Now, one of the stories that caught my attention in particular was, you know, during the Reagan era, talking about the assaults on the social safety net. You know, as a kid growing up in the projects, I remember lining up at the local public school in the summertime for the school lunch programs they had there over the summertime. And I remember, you know, you get a little hot lunch of something that for most of the kids in that line was the only hot meal they would get in a daytime. And I remember one of the first things Reagan did was to eviscerate that program. So to see in the book that you talk about that kind of grabbed my attention, because I actually lived, you know, some of that experience.
Yeah. That particular chapter, there's a chapter called "The State Hastens to Say," is about a visit to a welfare office. And one of the things I wanted to show there that we try to grapple with throughout the book is the importance of white organizers, white workers, learning to fight racism, how it gets encountered, why it's so important, and to show the leadership of Black workers and also the friendships that get forged in the process.
And I think the important part of this, and look, as somebody who's done some organizing in my lifetime, you know, understanding those divides are so important. And that's why I think this is an important read. And it's not a kind of a history book kind of read. It's an enjoyable kind of read because it flows well. But, you know, it's those lessons that I think you were trying to get at, of talking about how to bridge those divides, those things that keep us pitted against each other. Because it's where I started today's program off at. You know, how we're, you know, take any issue and how we're easily divided and sliced and diced and pitted against each other, white, Black, male, female, gay, straight, whatever. All of those divisions are what tear us apart. And if we want real progress, we may have to hold hands and stand shoulder to shoulder with people we may not always agree with.
Well, and the best way to link arms and stand shoulder to shoulder is to have each other's back. And the best way to get people to have each other's back is to understand that the person oppressing us is the same. So, for example, when you said that abortion is the biggest issue right now for women, that's true, but it's also a biggest issue for all of us, because if they get away with that, it will, the autonomy that gets threatened, yes, women are going to get the brunt of it and they're going to get it first, but it strengthens the hand of those who are oppressing us all. There are a host of other issues that will get struck down if they get away with it. The good news is that we know how to stop them. This says a lot about what we need to do in November and ongoing to make sure who is making these decisions and that they come from us, that we turn out as many people as we can, and that we send a very loud message: you will not get away with this.
Is that the point of the book now? I mean, you know, that kind of activism, that kind of engagement now, is that the reason for the timing, or was this just, hey, this is when we put the book out, it just happened to be the next crisis that came up?
The truth is, always is the right time. And one of the things that we wanted to show, I was most proud of people like Rinku Sen, who praised the book because it normalizes organizing. And it shows that organizers are regular people who fall in love and like to eat and have kids and have sex and have joy and grieve and worry, but mainly have wonderful lives, and that you don't have to be superhuman to do it. And also demystifies organizing so that you can say, oh, I could see myself doing that, and makes it clear that we can win, and why, what we deserve, and how we get it.
Yeah. To take a little detour then off of what you just said, you know, I'm looking at, you know, Christian Smalls and the Amazon Labor Union in Staten Island, the victory they had at JFK 8. And the model that they followed was very, very much a grassroots, you know, member to member, worker to worker organizing method that, you know, my grandparents' generation, I believe, you know, used in building community and doing what I've been saying for years doing this program of, I believe unions are about community. They're about people. They're about, you know, shared experiences and all of us. That's the model that they took, and that's the direction that they went. So I kind of think that the two of these, your book and that, kind of walk in the same direction.
Absolutely. I'm really proud that Natalie Monares, who's one of the worker leaders at Amazon JFK 8, is going to be in conversation with us in New York on June 8th. And I said to her, I can't wait for you to read the chapter called The Union Makes Us Strong. And I said, especially see what they do in the bathrooms, because she was telling me about step-by-step the kind of organizing they did. And that's exactly the model that these workers use. It's at the call center of an airline reservation. And, you know, the workers realized that going to each other's houses, having hard conversations, speaking to people where they are, making it easy for them to get involved themselves, standing up to the bosses, using what they had to tear down the notices, the misinformation that the union busters put up. It so reminds me of what happened at the Amazon warehouse. So I was really excited about that.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Elaine Bravo. She is the co-author of Standing Up, Tales of Struggle. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out where you can get this. I hope you don't go to the A place. Maybe Powell's Books. We'll find a place where or ElaineBravo.com. I'm sure there's a way to get it there as well. Or EllenBravo.com.
That's okay. We'll take you also to Hardball Press, the publisher. You can order it there. But go to your independent bookstore, and if they have, say, oh, get this book in, and then you.
My Twitter extraordinaire will make sure we get the right links, because she is my spell checker. She's my linguistic expert and all of that. But, you know, in looking at this and I'm looking at the book and I'm going, you know, what do we want to take out of this? And again, it's the power of we the people to come together to organize and to fight for a future that is better for working people. That's basically the thesis of everything that I want to accomplish. Is that kind of the hope here?
It really is. It shows that change comes from the bottom up, not from the top down. It shows that people can grow and change. And one of the things you'll see when you look at the testimonials, I was so excited how many people pointed out that the book is about joy. It's about love. It's about relationships. And it's about the power of the people rather than the people in power.
No, I mean it's just one of those. It's one of those things that it's a good read, but it's also positive, and I like that. Instead of you know a how-to cookbook kind of thing, it doesn't bludgeon you with the message, which I think is good. In going through the book, you know, what story in this do you think is the thing that really grabs you that for you is your favorite bit?
So it's hard to say. I'll mention a couple of them. One of them is the one we mentioned, The Union Makes You Strong. Another one is the one called Listen to the Children. It's about how a group of children won family leave in Wisconsin. That was one of the autobiographical chapters. And it shows both the importance of engaging kids, but also how much our kids are already hearing and knowing what our lives are like,
right?
And taking it on themselves to go to school sick so their mom won't get fired, and why they can be part of the change we're making.
Yeah, I do want to ask you about that.
Chapter, yeah, go
I
ahead.
Do want to ask, because you said it's a little bit autobiographical, because your own son was in an accident and actually did some lobbying to get Tommy Thompson, the governor at the time in Wisconsin, to sign an expanded healthcare bill that he didn't want to do. And as I'm reading through this, I'm going, you know, Tommy Thompson, you know, turned into, you know, a pretty far right character. And it just shows how far the Republican Party, especially in Wisconsin, has gone over the last, you know, 30 years.
It's true. But, you know, the other thing that happened is those kids were so powerful. Reporters were walking into the governor's office saying, did you hear those kids? How can you possibly not sign this bill? With tears streaming down their face. That made a difference. Those kids had an impact. And he said that. So my son turned into a daughter in the book. He was proud to do that. But he came with me to the bill signing, and the governor pointed to him and said, you know, it's because of the kids that I'm signing this. And he offered my child the pen, and my son looked at me, and I could tell the look meant, look, I know he's a bad guy, but I want that pen. And I nodded and said, of course, you can have it.
Of course. Do you still have it?
We still have it. They were very proud that they had that effect. And the headline the next day, just like it says in the chapter, was, children lobbyists win lawmakers' hearts. sometimes that actually happens.
No, see, those are the kind of uplifting, incredible stories that, people need to hear. Because so much of what we get from stories and from our news, especially, is the negative stuff, is the down stuff. So to finally, you know, something positive of people organizing, people succeeding, lives getting better. I'm all in favor of it. I think it's a good thing. I hope people will check out the book Standing Up, Tales of Struggle, written by Ellen Bravo and her husband, Larry Miller. We will get links out. EllenBravo.com, the website. We'll get that out. Also, we'll get some other stuff.
I'll just say one last thing. This is also a love story. My 97-year-old friend complained that there wasn't more sex. My older son thought there was too much. I think it's just right, and I hope you do too.
There you go. Ellen, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Love talking to you. Thanks a lot. Take good care.
Again, the book, Standing Up, Tales of Struggle, written by Ellen Bravo and Larry Miller. We will get links out on social media, how you can check it out. EllenBravo.com, the website. We'll get that out as well. Your thoughts, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Going to take a quick break. Back on the other side. Just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss an episode. Subscribe, like, share, comment, all of that stuff. Back after this.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Interesting little tidbit. Republican candidate from Minnesota evidently wants to eliminate early childhood education. Minnesota State Representative Steve Drazkowski evidently argued that if they can get rid of early childhood education, that parents should be able to raise their kids until their kids at five, at least before government comes with a school bus, backs it up to the maternity ward room door and takes them to the government school. Okay, so you're going to abolish early childhood education. What are you going to do in its place? Here's a thought. Here's a question. Honest question. Because I might be convincible. I might be someone you could go, yeah, maybe we don't put kids in school at five. Maybe we let them stay at home with their mother or their father or their parents. Maybe that bonding is more important than sending them to school. Maybe. What policy are you going to move to make that possible? What policy are you going to do to help families get through this? Is there a maternity policy coming? Is there a way for mom to stay home for a couple of years? Because I know the sacrifices that my wife and I have made over the years to make sure that my wife was able to stay home with our children, that fortunately we were able to make, that most couples are not. Maybe, just a thought, because there are crummy employers out there, and lots of them, and even some of them that are Democrats. I point to Texas Democratic Representative Henry Cloulier, who evidently, this is the report by Jezebel, evidently discredited and fired a staffer who was 28 weeks pregnant because she requested maternity leave. And then evidently, according to the reports, court documents show that the congressman himself requested that other staffers write letters about the woman's job performances after he fired her. So what policies are you going to move to protect women who are pregnant from giant pieces of garbage like this? And there are tons of them. What policies are you going to move to encourage families to have children? Oh, that's right. Crickets. None. Because you don't have anything. And this is my problem with the entire Republican establishment. There's nothing. There's no policy there. There's no help. There's you're on your own. And the frustrating part of this is I know early childhood education helps. I know that if you can get kids learning early, they're going to do so much better in school. if you instill a love of learning early, they're going to do so much better in life. Problem. Here's the problem. What happens when you don't have all of the kids moving in that same direction? What you end up in, and I've seen this happen, you have a handful of kids, usually the homeschool types, because we got the Bible, we're going to quote them and tote them, that then weigh classrooms down. So all of those kids who had the advantage going into kindergarten, first grade, second grade, they're being held back by the people who go, no, I don't want to have my kid go, no government school. Instead of saying, no, we want to make sure that all kids have opportunities. Here's the weird thing, and this my email box full today, of outraged parents. You know, the type that, we should do away with government school. Outraged parents who are ticked at Joe Biden for saying that teachers care about kids, almost like they're their own. You know, I want my kids' teachers to think of my kids as special. Like they would almost think of their own, not as their own, but like their own. Would care if they're sick, would care if they're learning, would care about their future. But my email box full of people to tell me why teachers shouldn't care about their students like that. And why these outraged parents are now organizing around the fact that teachers shouldn't care this much and they care too much about the kids. Craziness. Literal craziness. But this is what the big moneyed interests have done to us. They've put us in this position where we're ready to go after each other over insanity. Got an email from Jen. Jen listening on WTTN 1580 AM 92.7 FM Madison, Wisconsin. Rick, have you seen this appalling story from Alabama? I have a friend whose son was born with a genital problem. She doesn't say what it is. Does this mean if they live in Alabama, the doctors would have to wait until the child's 18 to correct it? Don't know what the problem was to correct. What kind of scars would that leave? It's horrible these people are doing this to families. My friend is so distraught. Keep speaking out for the voiceless. And she attaches a story about how a new Alabama law is going to ban medical treatment for minors with gender dysphoria. I don't know why the people who tell us that government should be out of our lives are putting government directly in our lives. But this is where Alabama is going. Alabama, who has one of the worst education systems in the country, one of the worst healthcare systems, one of the worst poverty problems, standard of living problems. You go down the list. But this is so important that we've got to move on. Now, I don't know what I would do in a situation if my child had gender dysphoria. Don't know. But I do know, and I've said this from the beginning, Jen, that I don't believe government should be the person to tell you that. And I don't know what your friend's child's problem was, but I also know government shouldn't have any say in that either. That should be between the parents and the doctor, which, again, is kind of weird coming from the earlier story of parents who don't think we should have government schools or have teachers who care about kids, but they care enough to ensure that, well, doctors don't do anything to kids because somehow they care. What kind of a rabbit hole have we fallen into? What kind of a rabbit hole have we fallen into where we got a Supreme Court justice talking about the domestic supply of infants? And when are we going to come to some sanity around all of this is meant to tear us apart? All of this is meant to keep us angry at each other. Jen, it is appalling. It's appalling that all these states are doing this stuff, especially the red states. You know, the red states who have seen a huge jump in people dying from the coronavirus that they've completely forgotten about. You know, we're over 1 million people who have been killed by corona. You wouldn't know it. Sad stuff. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. You can get that on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your favorite podcast. It's always there. Make sure you subscribe, share, like, comment. Quick break, right back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm not sure when Maria Bartiromo went crazy, but evidently she's now pointing her finger at Democrats and they're inventing a new variant. Look, she's on Fox now. So when she was a business reporter, she was somewhat sane, somewhat rational. Now she's got to be one of the outraged, outrageable, crazy folks. So she's all, what a surprise, right on schedule. Here comes the midterm variant. Expect it. And as Dr. Fauci said, a little concerned about the fact that the correspondence dinner happened, kind of this don't worry mentality. Is it over? I don't know. But we sure act like it is. And we're here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So I'm looking at Maria Bartiromo, and she's got it in her mind that the Democrats are making up a new variant, that anything that happens in the future is all going to be Joe Biden's fault, like inflation, like everything else. It's Joe Biden's fault.
I don't understand when she says that this is part of the Democratic plot to boost the party's chances in the November midterms. It doesn't make sense because, why would the party create something that could be proven didn't exist, or create it to then say, well, we tackled it when it didn't exist in the first place? So the whole thing was just, but you know this, Mornings with Maria, I think that's the show. It's famous for conspiracy theorists and false things.
I've actually never watched her show, to be honest. I watched her a lot when she was I think she was on CNBC, or I think it was CNBC. She was the business. She was Squawk Box. She was on the Business Channel a lot. Joey Ramone of the Ramones wrote a song about her, about how he used to love watching her, report on the business news. That's the Maria Bartiromo I remember. And like this one, the Jeanine Pirro wannabe, I don't know. I'm struggling with.
No, he's probably not going to write another song about her.
No, he's been dead for about 10 years. But
you're right. So maybe they would pick up the old song AC/DC Highway to Hell when they talk about her. How about that one?
There you go. I got to get your thoughts on this. Because what's going on with Trump and the lawsuit in New York and the fines that are going on, and he has to turn stuff over. Is it possible that he no longer has any electronic devices whatsoever? Because evidently he's claiming he doesn't have any of the cell phones that have been identified by the New York Attorney General's investigation. Nothing he claims has been given to him by the Trump Organization. Nothing, I guess, all gone. I guess he's turned over what he had as a personal cell phone, but nothing else. None of the burners, I guess, are going to be available.
That's what he says. He says he has no Trump Organization cell phones. Now, former presidents, by the way, there are certain things that occur with all former presidents, and there is now I'll create a – Maria will be on with a conspiracy theory if she hears this.
Uh-oh.
But the intel services monitor presidents with electronic devices such as phones. They don't eavesdrop. They monitor for security reasons in case somebody's trying to hack the phone. So anything he would have officially, that would be known. As far as the rest of them, he could say, they threw them away. They could have had burner phones. People have burner phones. But he says he currently doesn't have any phones, computers or electronic devices. Now, this is the important part, issued to him by the Trump Organization. So his executive assistant, Rick, is standing next to him with the devices.
Right.
They're not issued to him. They're probably issued to an executive assistant.
Yeah, there's the workaround.
That's it. That's it. Look, he's not functioning without a phone, number one. Number two, if he has sort of the, what they call the official, you know, post-presidential phones, then the security agencies, again, they don't listen in, but they monitor him. So they would know if he had a phone. Trump Organization phones, very possible. Somebody got smart and said, okay, you're not going to have a phone, but the assistant that follows you everywhere, they're going to have a phone and a computer. And, you know, wouldn't you? Let me ask you a question, Rick. If you were running the Trump Organization, I mean, Lord forbid, but if you were, all right, would you allow him to have a phone?
Oh,
think about it, in a computer?
I wouldn't let him have anything.
Right, there you go. Right, exactly. Maybe a Lego kit or something, but not a phone. So I do believe he doesn't have any phones issued to him. They're issued to someone else.
All right, I'm waiting to see where that goes. I'm also waiting to see where the Trump library is going to be.
Interesting you mentioned that, because each president has to have a library.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering about that.
I was to the George W. Bush Presidential Library, and it was frightening and it was hysterical all on the same level. I mean, you walked in and it was all 9/11 all the time. You know, twisted metal and every you know image, every video, every you know it was all there as you're walking in, and it was scary. And then you went and you got to play with toys. Like they had a triangle on a ball, like a little ball. And it was the three branches of government toy. And that was just kind of the epitome of the White House there. But my favorite was you get to go in and play president. 2 minutes. They hammer you with an issue. Lots of stimulus, lots of I got to play when the economy collapsed, what would you do? And you had senators coming in, you had the vice president, you had the chief of staff, you had news reports, you had all kinds of stuff. You're just hammered with all of this stimulus, and then you got to press a button to make a decision. And I'm going, yeah, because this is exactly how he made decisions. And then at the end, he would trot out on the video and explain what he did. It was scary.
Also, the libraries, they just don't have a complete free reign. The libraries have to contain the good and the bad. So you can bet that Trump is going to have one big argument with the library people. I promise you that.
Yeah. Now, again, the people who work there, and we got to interview a bunch of the curators and a bunch of the people who work there, they were all Bush, supporters. All people who wanted to put, W in the best light possible. We got to sit in the Situation Room because, after 9/11, they realized how antiquated our system was and thought it would be a great opportunity to steal the Situation Room and then replace it with a state-of-the-art one. So we actually got to sit in the Situation Room that they were in on 9/11 because they stole everything in it and put it in the Bush Library, which was kind of eerie and cool all at the same time.
This is totally off the topic, but this is so weird. The dais for the House is in Sam Rayburn's museum in Texas. He took it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's marble. He took it. I think they kind of asked him politely for it back, and it never happened. So, yes, the dais, it's a wooden one now where the president goes up for the State of the Union, but he took it in Rayburn. It's with Rayburn's people.
Yeah, interesting. I look at this and I love going to these presidential libraries, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of toys they come up with.
It'll be interesting.
I want to get to tomorrow's speech. The president's going to be giving a speech tomorrow on inflation and on policies on how he's going to move forward. This is the only way that his approval ratings pop up is if inflation comes down. We all know that. What can he say tomorrow? Do you think that it's going to help move in a direction? Because look, I don't think he can. I don't think he really has any levers of control over the cost of oil because of what's going on in Ukraine, because of the Russians, and because of gouging of the oil companies. And I don't think he can do anything on other than price controls on the prices and stuff. Because corporate America is literally telling us they're raising prices because they can, not because they have to.
Well, right. I mean, look, if you look at the entire inflation picture, and then you had the Fed Reserve raise interest rates, and I think, frankly, they're off base on that because we have a brand new market. We have a brand new situation with the post-pandemic and, the way that jobs have opened. We still, and everybody talks about, well, you have all these job choices, wages are falling behind. That's another fact. So there's a lot out there that is beyond the control of the president. One thing that bothers me about the parts I've read about tomorrow's deal with the president and what he's going to talk about, the part that bothers me, and I could be completely wrong, tell me if I am, we'll know tomorrow if I am, I don't understand why the president's people are having him draw the contrast between his economic plan and the Republicans, because they're going to zone in on Rick Scott, who I think back in maybe March or April, he was rebuked by Mitch McConnell himself because he came up with this idiotic plan.
His 11-point plan. No, look.
Yeah, it's idiotic.
No, it is idiotic. I've talked about it ever since. I think the reason that they're going to do that, it's the only written plan the Republicans have. Mitch McConnell has said, well, elect us, and then we'll show you then, maybe. Right. So I think it's all they've got. All they've got is to say, look, we're doing everything we can, but hey, here's what they're going to do. Here's what they're saying they're going to do. Here's what they've written. That's the only reason I think that he's going to say anything or should.
I just think if they bring in Rick Scott or Rick Scott's plan, I think McConnell comes out and says, look, I rebuked that. I said it's never going to happen. I said that back in March, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I thought when I first heard the president was going to do this that he would address whatever he's going to address tomorrow. I have to assume manufacturing and the oil companies and some things like that. But I just don't know about the president doing the contrast. There are, interest groups and advocacy groups and
there's me for
political
that.
Attack groups that can go out there and do it for him.
Right. No, I'm hoping he'll have some concrete ideas and policies that we can put Joe Manchin on the spot for. Look, Manchin wants to bring down inflation. There's got to be some ways to do that. And look, there are ways that windfall profit taxes, I think, are one way to throw that out there to put a little juice into the CEO boardrooms to maybe stop gouging where they can.
Right.
But I think it's got to be policy driven. I think there has to be some concrete activities, not just finger pointing.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at, like I said, the wages, that are falling behind, but also the fact that, this is a different world. We've got to continue to focus on the manufacturing and also the supply chain. We now know if you're going to put together, in Philadelphia at a widget factory, you're going to put this machine together and you need 150 pieces, and you've got 149, the 150th piece comes from China. We know these things now. I mean, they've been well advertised. And so I hope they focus in also on ways to, enhance our supply chain.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where, I got a couple emails from people today talking about, why haven't we already, reduced the tariffs on China, which I think is a bad idea.
I do, too.
But there's this push out there saying, hey, if you want to solve our supply chain problems, swing the doors open, let China be our manufacturing reserve and get things back on the shelves. Even though I got to tell you, I've been in the stores. Shelves aren't empty. So this fallacy that the shelves are empty and that the prices are going up because the demand is so great that they can't keep things on the shelves because supply and demand is demanding that we raise prices is a bunch of, to steal a Biden word, a bunch of malarkey.
Right. Yeah. That's what I said. You know, we can't, when we want to enhance and improve our supply chain, and I agree with you 100%, it's not by reducing tariffs. Now, at some point in time, if we make a deal with China, they can reduce tariffs. The president has kept tariffs. He's kept them. The way to help the supply chain is to, well, like the chip factory coming to Newark, Ohio area, Licking County, Ohio. Those are the ways to combat this, not
create
reducing the tariffs.
I'm right there with you. Lastly, I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on today's expansion of Internet access. The president says 40% of people are going to be eligible for either subsidized or free high-speed internet. They're going through with the plan to make that available. I think you know, to do what we've done in the past, you know, the Rural Electrification Act of the 40s. I think this is in line with that. I'm curious your thoughts. Is this something worth doing?
I think it's great because they're going to expand the this access to 40%. Of American families. I mean, think about it. They have to expand it to 40%. We're actually that behind, in a sense.
Yes.
You know, with it. That's absolutely amazing. We also, for years in Congress, we fought for broadband access, increased access, you know, for rural America. I was from a rural area. But the rural electric cooperatives, which I had supported heavily, and I always supported them because they came in when the big boys didn't want to provide power. That's why the rural electric cooperatives came into being.
Right.
You know, the big power companies didn't want to do it. It wasn't enough money. So it boils down to money when it boils down to access. And I think if over 40% of the people need access, somebody's got to do it. And if the Biden administration expands the free high-speed internet access to 40% of American families, I think it's great. It's shocking in this era that figure actually exists.
Now, what's shocking is we have a system set up on, you know, as you pointed out, the big boys who want to make profit only going where the profitable areas are.
Sure.
And rural areas like where you and I live get shortchanged. What were we pay just outrageous rates for what in other areas is, modest internet at best. And this is why I think the bipartisan infrastructure bill, that law that was passed, I think this is a huge part of getting this investment done. And the fact that it's going to help families get the internet that they need, I think is important. The website, getinternet.gov, you can go there, find out if you qualify.
Fantastic.
And here's the important part of this, and this is the part I made at the beginning. I do not qualify. I evidently make too much money to qualify. And yet I'm still for it. I still think it's a good idea.
Sure.
I still think it's something we should do. So the message out of this for me is, even if it doesn't benefit you, you can still be in favor of it because it's going to help us as a country be much more competitive.
That's right. And kids need it. Look what happened during the pandemic.
Yep.
You had to rely on it.
That's simple. But Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Seriously, I mean, I look at this and the reality is, you should have been doing this years ago. Years ago. In fact, I love some of those places. Like in Tennessee, there's a city that they own their own. As part of your tax dollars, you get internet and you get Wi-Fi throughout the city. It's fabulous. But that's socialism. We can't do that kind of stuff because somebody would call it socialist. Heaven forbid we get decent things. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Don't miss a minute. You can get that wherever you get your favorite podcasts or thericksmithshow.com. Back after this. Got a couple of emails I wanted to jump into before we wrap things up today. And again, if you want your email read on the air, email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And as I said, you know, a lot of times I use them here on the show to you know, open up some discussion. And, well, I think some folks actually like it. Joe, listening on WIOO 97.9, 107.3 FM in Carlisle, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, writes, why isn't Biden repealing the Trump tariffs? If inflation is Sleepy Joe's biggest problem, wouldn't it make sense to dump the tariffs and allow the Chinese goods back into the U.S. to ease our supply chain issues? If we can get cheaper stuff at this moment, we need to do it as soon as possible. And he sends an article that says that that Biden is lifting tariffs on Ukrainian steel. And yeah, we do that a lot. It's how we got into the mess we're in this moment. And we talked about this the other day. Our foreign policy has been based on, we're going to whip a little industry on you, the old George Carlin bit. You know, have a little war, you know, whip a little industry on them because the two middle letters in the word industry are U.S. And we did that for years, and that's how we built up the rest of the world. And, of course, corporate America got, you know, really happy, and profits were really good for them. And now we've hit a critical mass point where we've lost a good portion of that infrastructure, that manufacturing. We don't have much to give away. In fact, now we've got to start figuring out how we claw some of that back. So I got to tell you, Joe, I'm not in favor of Biden doing away with the tariffs on China. I think what we need to be doing, and what I'm hoping he talks about in his speech on Tuesday, is reviving manufacturing here, bringing some of those jobs back. And if not bringing the jobs back, at least investing in the future jobs. That future technology, that future entrepreneurial activity that is going to happen. The question is where. I want it to happen here. I want those jobs to be created here. I want those opportunities to be here. I want those workers to be here making good wages. And if we're investing our tax dollars in it, and I think you'll agree, Joe, I want those jobs to be able to support a family. I don't want to have to subsidize those workers working for that company that we subsidized. Kind of makes sense to me. But as far as rolling back the subsidies on China and Trump's tariffs, look, I was in favor of putting tariffs on stuff. I think Trump did it badly. I think there was no real plan in place. And in fact, there were a lot of disincentives that ended up helping Russia in ways that that we really didn't want. But I'm sure that the people who lobbied for them did. But at some point, you got to put your foot on the ground and say, no, we're not giving up any more of our manufacturing. You know, we've lost more than 5 million manufacturing jobs in the last, 22 years? And it's not that we've lost them. We know where they went. We know, and we know who took them. And it's easy to blame the Chinese. And I don't. I blame corporate America. I blame those CEOs who said, hey, there's cheap exploitable labor over in China. There's a burgeoning market over in China that we can exploit. And oh, by the way, there's a massive amount of subsidies from the Chinese government. Greed is what created this situation. CEO heroin, it was what I call it. Cheap labor and lax environmental regulations. What? Don't have to deal with government regulations? What? We can exploit workers? Sign us right up. And away they ran. And not only did they run, we subsidized them going. So shame on us. So in this moment to say, oh, no, we need cheap stuff because, you know, the jobs we have, our wages aren't keeping up. We got to fix our addiction to cheap stuff. I'm not there. We've got to fight this fight at some point. And it should be now. There isn't going to be a convenient time down the road to go, oh, now's a good time for us to fight this. And guess what? The tariffs haven't caused the inflation. Our broken supply chain, that's what's done it. Just-in-time inventory, on-demand manufacturing, that's what's done it. The smart people in corporate America, that's what's gotten us in this mess. And hopefully the sooner we learn those lessons, the better off we're going to be. Is it going to be easy? No. And I'm hoping the president has some things to say on Tuesday. I'm hoping there's a way to ease some of the suffering for working families, because we're struggling. There's no question about that. So the question is, which policies is he going to pursue to help folks make it through? I'd like to see some stuff on prescription drugs. I'd like to see some stuff on a lot of stuff. But we'll talk about that again tomorrow. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Get that at thericksmithshow.com or email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show.